Monk on the Run. Who could resist a book called Monk on the Run, with chapters titled Monk on the Lam and Monk in the Slam? The Buddhists were not best pleased to learn that the eager student who'd kept their discipline for 5 years came to hide from the feds. As character witnesses in his eventual trial for dealing pot, their tone was chilly. But Warren Rosen is a real artist as well as a con artist, and you have to admit his strategy was creative. At first, he wasn't sure he could do it. Me, a somewhat hyper New Yorker, sitting still for 50 minutes? Are you kidding me? But soon he was sitting zazen for 8 and 10 hours a day. Granted, his first thought when preparing for an austere retreat was what kind of special treats we could take. But he moved smoothly from a life in New York's East Village, making art and seeking out friendship, women, fine food, and wine, to rising at 4:30 a.m., chopping vegetables with pure concentration so each piece would be exactly the same size, and meditating until ice picks of pain stabbed his knees. The discipline and inner quiet turned out to be the perfect prep for 22 months in prison. Neither life had been planned. Rosen grew up the only artist in a suburban Jewish family. He learned to smoke pot when his older brother brought some home from college, started sourcing it for his friends at the U of Iowa, became a foodie after a meal of blood sausage, brown bread, and vodka with a German art professor, chose art over sociology because he knew he'd rather hang out with bongo drummers and painters than with academics. "I never wanted a white picket fence," he says dryly. Selling pot was his way of funding his art. He'd begun to have some success, small shows in New York and one in Europe, work acquired by small museums. Then came the 4 a.m. phone call. His friend Billy, who'd grown up in a privileged Jewish East Coast family and bought Rosen's art and invited him to fabulous dinners and fronted him pot to sell, had been arrested. Faced with a choice between 2 years in prison and life, Billy had offered up his contacts to the DEA. Rosen smashed his phone and took off. First to Ithaca, where he remembered a Jewish Buddhist friend saying that a Zen student could travel the country, studying with different teachers and living at monasteries. It beat prison. He showed up at the only Buddhist center in Ithaca and found a sign saying the monks were on vacation. What? Monks on vacation? I could envision them piling in a van and sightseeing at the Grand Canyon. Syracuse had more options, so he bought a bus ticket at a Greyhound station that was crowded with the down and out, derelicts, outcasts, or fugitives. Oh, that's me. At the Zen Center in Syracuse, he was able to sit longer each time, stilling the jitters, letting cloudy water settle. From there, he went to Dai Bosatsu, high in the Catskills, where the first thing he had to do was remove his street clothes and put on the institutional robe, just like prison. The discipline at the monastery was more intense, though. He would have to keep silence. In Manhattan, the only time I wasn't speaking was when I was sleeping. 5 months in, he decided it was a terrifying but wondrous experience to put yourself out into the universe while emotionally naked. He was no longer an artist, a foodie, a bon vivant, a New Yorker, and a denizen of the East Village. He was just a student who saw with an artist's eye. In Tasajara for 3 secluded winter months, he watched snow falling, the whole world turning white, and the monks walking single file into the whiteness in their black robes, and he wished it were a conceptual piece he'd created. Now he has created a book. Monk on the Run is shaped the way he has lived his life, moment to moment, choosing freedom over convention, scorning practicality, following impulses. Lots of digressions, in other words, and prose that's not always linear or logical, but stays vivid, a paint box spattered with bright personalities. Women who were art royalty. One showed up in black jeans, white t-shirt, high black boots, and a full-length fur coat. A mysterious fellow who carried a gun to black tie dinners and had boxes of wine delivered from all over the world, some bearing army insignia. A Dominican cartel leader who asked Rosen to teach him to meditate. My lips press tight when I read the risks Rosen took, not only for himself, but for the friends who hid him. But I relax into awe when he describes the art projects that drove him. A giant frozen disc he placed in the woods, the trees behind it becoming more visible as it melted into translucence. A clifftop house in upstate New York, whose owner let him paint it phosphorescent green, provided he had it repainted for free, then photograph it on a moonless night and again at sunrise, glowing. Performance art with nude men and women on pulleys that let them interact as bodies moving in space, free of gravity. 1,000 pounds of ivory wax he molded into a giant chair, then slowly melted, so it funneled back into the mold. Recreating life itself, he writes. Life and death, the phoenix. It takes one to know one. Rosen's mother once asked him, her jaw no doubt clenched, "Don't you have regrets for ruining an art career that was just starting to take off?" He gave her a look. "Mom, there wouldn't have been a career or potential career if not for the money I made illegally. None of these pieces would have been created, and none of the connections would have been made. I would have still been bartending." Money for its own sake was never the point, nor was fame. He'd watched other artists whore, attending every gallery opening, insinuating themselves into the art world, hoping to become one of the art stars of the post-Warhol years. Many broke under the pressure. What Rosen loved was the process, popping an idea and making it happen. He talks about past projects with a kid's excitement, no longer as serious as he was in art school. In the New York years, he mustered enough ego to insist that his work belonged there. But over those years of meditation, the persona slipped away. He lost the New York edge, the need to always be on top of his game. "With deep meditation, the brain literally changes," he says, "and the change is there forever. Am I still walking on air? No. But the peace of mind, just being comfortable in my skin, that's what's important. Knowing all your wants and hates are an illusion, that stays with you." "I was lucky," he says a minute later, which is not the way most people would put it if they went underground for 5 years in a setting tougher than the Marines, then surfaced and put together an antiques business in California only to see a convoy of black SUVs coming. He ran again, eluding federal agents for days by running along a creek the way he'd seen people do in movies, then hiding out in a shack in the woods. When he finally turned himself in, he was told that in California, the charges would likely have been dropped, but he would have to stand trial in southern Manhattan, one of the toughest district courts for drug cases. Where, okay, he was a little bit lucky, sentenced to 22 months when it could have been far longer. But what he means by lucky is that he found a way to step off the merry-go-round of life for 5 years. It got him ready for prison's roller coaster. Warren Rosen is not a practical, sober man. His refusal to conform to rules and precedent lets him dream up his art. His enthusiastic appreciation for pleasure, nature, eccentricity, creativity lets him adapt to all sorts of strangeness. And his refusal to judge lets him pile up interesting friends everywhere he goes. The gourmand who walked into the bar Rosen was tending, English bulldog at his side, and swept back a black cape lined in red silk to sit on the bar stool and talk. They became friends, and the guy invited Rosen to six-hour chaîne de rôtisserie dinners that required him to buy second-hand formal wear and check the pockets for cockroaches that had cohabited his tenement apartment. The drag queen with the drug addiction who became a Buddhist abbot. The cellmate, prison-built and all ganged up, that he traded stories with for hours. The infamous John Gotti Jr., who wanted Rosen as his cellmate. "Tell the Jew I want to talk to him." Authorities refused. Rosen has no regrets. He refuses to entertain them. After years alone, he's now, in his 70s, wildly in love and living in Oaxaca, where he enthuses about 5 centuries of cobblestoned history, world-class bakeries and coffee, mezcal, moles of every color, and an interesting expat community of artists, because it's not the foo-foo umbrella drinkers of Cancun. He could have finished out his life in Santa Cruz, where he owns a scenic chunk of land. But if you stay in the same place all the time, he says, it's very predictable what's going to happen. If you allow yourself to leave things open... I'm imagining his next book as loose and funny and scathing, perhaps titled The Foo Foo Umbrella Drinkers of Cancun.